Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost. Now, last week I had a huge scare. There was a massive fire which took over 40 acres and resulted in over 20 horses being evacuated. Now, I don't know what to do if there's a fire, but we need to be prepared. So today I'm joined by Jim Green. He's the founder of Barta and he's the animal tactical advisor for Hampshire Fire and Rescue. Jim's going to give us some advice on how we prepare for a major event like a fire and what actions we should take when a fire happens. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. Today we're joined by a lovely guest who he's a hero and he won't like being called a hero, not because of his full-time job, which is a firefighter, but because he saves our beloved horses. He rescues them. We're joined by Jim Green. He is founder of the British Animal Rescue and Trauma Care Association and he's an animal rescue tactical advisor at Hampshire Fire and Rescue. Jim, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Amy. Nice to see you again.
And you, well, I could just introduce you with, you know, award winning, has met the Princess Royal, has spoken at the National Equine Forum. You've done all these amazing things, including last year we had a chat. And actually, if you listen to the podcast regularly, you can go back and listen to Jim's original interview where we talked, Jim, about your time in California helping save animals and people from the California fires. So you must feel awful being at home right now and hearing all these fires that are going on again. Don't you just want to jump on a plane and go out and help them?
Yeah, it's a big scale, big task, Amy. There's a lot going on at the moment. A lot of my friends are committed to firefighting and animal evacuation and sheltering as well. Because there's so much displacement from the sheer scale of these fires that animals need to be cared for at the shelters, whether they're large or small.
Well, it's really scary. Normally we see horrific fires like this in California and we're just praying for everybody. We raise money for them. You know, there's lots of fundraising going on to try and help them. Very rarely, and we're very lucky, very rarely do we suffer with these fires, these massive heath fires at home in the UK. And last week in particular, we struggled. We had some horrific fires because of the heat wave. Were you involved in going and helping out with these fires?
We haven't had many animal issues, to be fair, with the fires, which is a good thing. They obviously would have affected a lot of wildlife. And many of these fires are occurring in sites of special scientific interest. So obviously, from an ecological perspective, they've been very devastating. But fortunately, we haven't seen the sort of issues that they're dealing with in California, where lots of horses are trapped or require evacuation from the fire situation itself.
Are these wild horses that need evacuating or are they owned by people?
Yeah, no, these are owned by people. And, you know, around 50% of the population, both here and in the United States, have pets. And many people in California have livestock and horses. And so, yeah, it has a huge bearing on the operational side of the incident. And that's really, you know, why Barta was set up. It's about helping firefighters and other emergency responders to deal with the management of incidents where animals are involved, but also around education of the public so that they're better prepared in case these things do happen. Of course, yes, We know that fires happen regularly in California, but you'll be amazed at how many people just aren't prepared and haven't taken the steps necessary to evacuate their animals ahead of the fire. And therefore, that places our emergency responders in quite a lot of risk.
And that's exactly why I asked you to come onto the podcast today, to educate us, because what shocked me last week is we had a huge fire very, very close to where I live. And I'm paranoid about fires anyway. You know, I don't like people smoking. I don't like them smoking on the yard. I don't want them in the field. I don't want them anywhere near our horses because of all the hay. I have fire extinguishers everywhere. I know that you do a lot of education going to yards and basically helping them prepare. You know, we can hire you for the day, can't we, Jim, to come down and say, right, have a look at the yard and see how we can make it a little bit safer. I think what shocked me the most last week was that we didn't know the fire was going to happen. It was very, very close. And when you say in California, you know, they don't evacuate the horses early enough, over here last week, we didn't have time to evacuate the horses. So, and I say we, because a friend of mine had a yard very close to the huge Heath fire that took, I think it was 24 hours before it was actually put out in the end. And she had this moment of, she had over 40 horses there. Yeah. She's a riding school. And she said, at what point does she evacuate? And she ended up evacuating 20 horses. So that was dramatic enough. And luckily, the local community were amazing because they all got together and said, you know, you can have our field, you can pop the horse in there for a while. But it made me think, how do we prepare for something like that? Something that we don't have a chance to evacuate our horses. Suddenly there's a fire. What do we do? Should we all have an action plan?
Yeah, definitely. A fire management plan is really, really important. And the reason that we're seeing the number of fires in the wildland areas around here at the moment is really down to the fuel moisture content. We're surrounded by fuel. Most things will burn. And of course, as we've had these dry conditions, the moisture is really deficient. And so things will burn much sooner than they might do otherwise and much quicker. And so that's why we're seeing these huge fires that are taking over the heathland particularly. But really, in agricultural situations, we're surrounded by fuel that is highly flammable all year round. You know, as you said, we've got hay, straw, our buildings are timber, and really people in agricultural establishments are vulnerable from fire all year round. And that may not be a fire encroaching from the outside, but most of these fires actually start from within. And unless we have a plan, they will be very, very devastating. You know, historically, people in agriculture weren't affected by the legal framework that our fire safety law fits within. And since 2005, every business is responsible for their own fire risk management. And that includes agriculture and equine establishments. And so it's really important that people do take fire safety seriously. They do take time to research what's needed, and they do undertake a fire risk assessment, because that will open up to them all of the issues that are very common throughout the world in terms of agriculture and fire risk.
Okay, so that's if we're a livery yard owner, then we'll go through some tips in a moment of the minimal things that should be in place, both to prepare and then the actions if a fire was to happen. But let's start with, if you just own a horse and you're on a livery yard, because a listener of ours, Vicky, bless her, she's a groom as well, she keeps her horse on a farm, and the farm had 40 acres go up in flames at the beginning of last week. And for her, it's so scary because she doesn't have the fire assessment beforehand. She doesn't own the livery yard, she just keeps her horse there. And straight away, as an individual horse owner, keeping your horse on grass livery on another yard, what sort of precautions can we take and what actions should we have if there's a fire?
Well, I think, first of all, you need to question the people that are running the establishment and respond when you start talking about fire risk assessments and fire plans. And, you know, I always talk about this in regard to children. So if you were going to leave your child with a childminder, you would do a lot of research before you left them there. And you would want to make sure that childminder had the right certification, the right first aid training, had plans in place, the staff that they employed were also up to a certain standard. And what I see is that people often, when they're leaving their horses in livery yards, you know, have a different set of priorities, and they're mainly thinking about what's practical for them, and whether that livery is close to home. You know, obviously the charges will have a factor in whether they choose that yard. But I think we should really be questioning people and saying, you know, if I'm at work, if I'm away, you know, and a fire starts on that yard, what is going to happen and how are you going to look after my horse?
And that's fair enough. At any business place, you know, if you go to your local hairdressers or your local restaurant, you have signs on the wall saying evacuation, here's the exit, you all need to go meet in the car park, for instance. And I think whether it's a huge livery yard, a competition livery yard, or whether it's your local stables with, you know, a couple of boxes, you should absolutely have an evacuation process. Which brings me to, I've been thinking about this for nights, Jim. I hardly slept the other night saying, what would I do if there was a, before all the rain came, and then I was singing in the rain going, thank goodness, I feel a little bit slightly safer for a small amount of time. But I was lying in bed thinking, what would I do? My horse is really bad at loading. Like really bad. So he can have one day he could be amazing and we can load in 20 minutes. And another day he'll say, no, I don't want to. And he'll be afraid. The more afraid I am, the less chance he's going to load. So I can imagine in a huge fire, I'm either going to be really petrified, in which case he won't want to get in, or I'm going to be, I don't care. In you get, you know, whatever it takes, get in the box. But I guess loading is actually really important when it comes to dealing with a fire.
Yeah, and I think it's important that all the horses on a yard will load. And that's really critical, because wasting time on one horse can, you know, waste valuable minutes or even mean that horse is taken back and others are then loaded and taken away. But the reality of it is, if a fire starts and we're in that situation, you know, that is a bad place to be. You know, that the fire will spread very, very quickly. The risks that people may take to rescue horses may be too great, really. And many people have been injured trying to rescue horses. You know, the idea of firefighters going into barns and rescuing animals with breathing apparatus, you know, that's not really realistic in a real situation, because they are so challenging to deal with. Fighting the fire alone is difficult enough. So it's really important that we've thought about this, and that we've thought about how a fire may start, and we've reduced the chances of a fire starting in the first place. And then if a fire does start, then we've got an evacuation plan. You know, even things like having head collars immediately available, having pre-thought out refuge areas. And one of the first things you need to think about is what's the prevailing wind? Because if you had a fire and your chosen place of refuge was actually downwind of the fire, then that would be very difficult to put the horses down there. They would be obscured by smoke, burning embers go up in the smoke plume and fall down. And, you know, that really is not acceptable. So the place that you've chosen may not be available on the day. So it's really important that you think about it, and also think about compatibility of the horses, particularly for a livery yard. You know, it's not necessarily the case that everything's going to be quite happy to be put in the same field together, is it? And so if there are some horses that are really not compatible, then you might have to have a separate plan for those, which may mean getting them off the site. There's actually quite a lot to think about, a lot to think through. A lot of these things are practical and common sense, but you do need to practice, and not just practicing during the day, but also thinking about what would happen at night, because often these fires do occur at night, and that changes the game totally.
Oh my goodness, at night I'd hate to even think. I'd just be horrified, because you can't see what you're doing. The flashing light scares the horses. Which again, I guess, you know, fingers crossed, you hope you never get a fire in the middle of the night, and then I guess you have to deal with it. But if the fire's in the day, I'm presuming you go through your evacuation process before the night is even close to falling.
Well, we take each situation on merit, and in Hampshire, every agricultural fire, every fire involving animals will attract the attendance of a tactical advisor such as myself. And we would work with the yard owner, and we would think about what the conditions are like at the time, whether the conditions are going to deteriorate, whether we need to have some forward planning and move animals off the site, other things that will be factors as whether the site is actually able to continue to operate, you know, depending on the scale of the damage. So there are so many factors to consider, but generally you'd want to move horses away from the immediate place of danger. And if you can leave animals in place because they're compartmentalized, they're segregated from the fire, then, you know, that's the best thing to do. If we can avoid moving animals, then we will do, because it does add inherent risks, both to the animal and to the people that are trying to move them.
Facebook's amazing for, you know, for showing what you're doing with your horses and life, but it's also a really quick rumour mill. When it came to the fire, I couldn't believe how many people were offering support. And I thought it was amazing. You know, the livery yard owner was overwhelmed with so many people saying, I can take a couple of horses, I can have geldings, I can have mares, you know, hands up all over the place. But it did make me think, I might have a little extension for barter, because wouldn't it be great if there was an emergency service website or some sort of group where all the local livery yards, no matter, because they're in competition, half of them don't speak to each other. But wouldn't it be great if they had a serious risk, they could go on, they could get the number, and each yard said, no matter what situation, if there's a fire or you need an evacuation, we will take horses if we've got the land available. And you've got that straight away numbers to ring for people that would have land in an emergency situation like a flood, a storm or a fire. And when I thought about my evacuation process, you know, my little 5-acre field with my two horses, where would I go? I haven't got any extra land. I've got no idea where I'd put the horses.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that you do that planning work before the event happens. One of the dangers and one of the things that happens in America is that because the incidents are of such a scale, lots of people want to help. And that actually can be quite a hindrance to the emergency services. So if you've got people turning up with horse boxes offering to support and they don't know how to reverse a horse box, suddenly you've got major issues. And so we also need to work to the whole kind of command structure. You know, the fire officer in charge of that incident has responsibility for everyone's safety. And so if you've got people arriving that he doesn't trust or he doesn't know, that can cause major issues to him. So I would say that it's really important that you make contact with people that will support you and help you before the event, and then you write down their emergency contact details on your action plan. And then in the event of an incident, you can call on those people to come and help you, trusted people who you know their capabilities. It's wise to have had them come and look at your land and to see exactly, you know, what space there is to maneuver, what vehicles they might bring. And you know, if you've done that work beforehand, then you're going to get a much better response from the emergency commanders allowing you to do that. So that's part of the whole pre-planning process. And as you say, you know, people might be in competition with you, but when the chips are down, everyone will muck in. And the rural community are really, really good at that. We just want to encourage people to be a bit more on the front foot and to have put some more effort into planning. And so that whatever the emergency, as you say, could be a flood, could be a power outage, could be a storm, you know, whatever it might be, if you've made those connections, you've got the plan in place, then you've got a much better chance of succeeding.
I just think of some of the yards. You know, I know one that's got 70 horses. 70 horses. 70. Where on earth, if I don't know where I'm going to put my two, where on earth are they going to put 70 horses? So I actually think I'm going to be proactive and phone round all the yards, everyone that I know, and say, look, let's just, can we help each other in an emergency situation? Even if it's just county by county. Because the other thing that's interesting is wherever you are, I think you know people within your area. So you might know people within 20 minutes down the road. Well, they might be struggling with the fire as well. So I think if you could have someone half an hour away, you know, where this fire was, I was half an hour away. So I could take a couple of horses. So I offered, you know, and said, if you need, you know where I am, you know, I'm here. But have people, I guess, a big enough distance that the fire's not going to get to them and they're going to end up evacuating them as well. So let's look at our prerequisites, as I like to call them, things that we absolutely must have in place before a fire.
As I mentioned earlier, you need to do a risk assessment, and that sounds really boring, but actually it's just a bit of common sense. And one of the first things you need to do is identify, you know, what could cause a fire to start. And there are a few things that you need to be aware of. And electrical problems are one of the biggest causes of fires. And, you know, wiring in an agricultural setting is really problematic unless it's been fully tested recently. It's in nice clean conduit. We've got to think about old systems that really might not be fit for purpose, and then people add to them as they grow the business. If you got your electrics tested recently, yeah, that's a really important thing to do, and to have circuit breakers and you know, all the modern safety measures that you have that will then shut down the electrics if there is a problem, such as vermin, for instance.
Oh, really?
Vermin chewing through wires is a common cause of fire.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
People overloading sockets, because in the old days they only needed one socket, but now we've got loads of different things plugged into this one socket. Mm-hmm. It might be one plug, but that might go through an extension lead to a four-way adapters, and so it's really important to understand how electrics work so that we don't overload the systems that we have. And if we do want to have more electrical devices, that we get a proper electrician in to make sure your system is secure. It's really worthwhile doing that. It will save you a lot of heartache in the long run. What else can be a problem? Well, other sources of ignition. Do you have the farrier come to the yard, and do they hot shoe? And they have their own responsibilities for their fire safety. But I would say that we need to have a nice clear area where the farrier is asked to shoe, and that you've got some firefighting measures there immediately to hand, just in case something goes wrong, so that you can nip that in the bud. Barbecues, they may be disposable barbecues, they may be purpose-made barbecues, but they've been the source of plenty of fires this summer. Mm. And we know of inadvertent fires caused by careless disposal of ashes from barbecues as well. So you've got to think about all the things that happen on the yard, all the activities, whether they're social or business, whether there are other people coming on the yard, what are the kind of things that may cause a fire to start? And you mentioned smoking at the beginning, Amy, and I think that's been a significant step change in reducing the chance of fire, is having very, very robust smoking policies. No smoking on the yard, I would say, should be mandatory advice for everybody. And, that really is important at this time of year, as you say, with the conditions that we're in at the moment, because a smouldering cigarette will cause a grass fire, which could very quickly spread to your property and affect the stables.
So the other element that made me look at our field, and I'm guessing future livery yards, is the escape route. So, and the access point. So I noticed that we only have one access point we can actually use. I'm kind of thinking I might have found a little bit of a loophole when it comes to planning now, so I'm a little bit excited, Jim, but ultimately I'd like another access route. So I need to phone the council and say, come on down, have a look, I would like another gate here. And then they need to give me permission. Without that permission of that gate and without that other access route, if there's a fire, we're in trouble, we can't get the horses out. So do the council have an element of risk? They need to be risk adverse when they're considering their applications. You know, is that a real valid point? Because in my head it is.
Well, in any sort of development that the council will be reviewing, then they will ask for advice from the Fire and Rescue Service. And so, yes, this is a very valid point, that if you've identified in your risk assessment that you have got limited egress when a fire starts, then I think it's perfectly acceptable to ask the question and to make proposals. So yes, if you've only got one way in and one way out, that really does limit you in the case of a fire. As we said earlier, the prevailing wind will have a bearing, and where the fire starts is going to potentially be a variable that will cause your plan to change. So you need to really cover all bases. But essentially what we want to do is make sure that the horses can be calmly led to a place of safety where they're secured and they cannot run loose. And so we need to make sure we've got head collars close by where they can be fitted quickly. And we need to make sure that everybody on the yard understands what the plan is. And that's really important, actually, to think about who's there, because businesses, you need to think about human safety first. And there may be people that would not be suitable for helping in the event of evacuation. So I'm thinking mainly of younger people. And yards often have young people helping out. And so we need to factor them into the risk assessment. And we need to think about what we're going to do with those young people, how we're going to make them safe before we start looking at evacuating horses. That's really, really essential. It may be that there are some jobs that can be given to them, which are not going to place them in danger, not going to place them at risk. One of them might be going to the end of the lane and guiding the fire appliances in. If it's in a remote rural location where signage is poor, that would be really helpful. Anything that we can do to speed up the response of the fire engines is going to be of use.
Well, on that note, really interesting, because Vicky, who struggled with the 40-acre fire, said she didn't know the longitude and latitude of where the yard was. And actually, had she known that, then the fire engine could have got there much quicker. And I think a lot of us don't have postcodes for where our yards are. It's just a field in the middle of nowhere. And to have that, what is it, an ordnance survey location, or would help?
Yeah, well, you can work on grid references. Different emergency services use different ways of finding their locations. And so it's worth finding out what your fire and rescue service uses and then give them that have that information to hand. We have an emergency action plan template that we can share with people, and we can do that through Horse Hour. And people can fill that out, and they can put in specific details. Now, there may be landmarks that are actually better and of more use for emergency services. And this wouldn't just be for fire. This could be police or ambulance in the case of alternative emergencies. So landmarks are good. Reference points are really important. And it may be that, so if it's Manor Farm, for instance, the fire crews will go to the entrance to Manor Farm, but actually where your yard is may be off a different road.
Well, where we are, there's four Manor Farms and one of them isn't a farm at all. So actually, no, I get that. Thank you for the offer of the template. I think that's a brilliant idea. If we'll pop the link on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and you just have to pop in your email address, and we'll send that out to everybody tomorrow. So it gives you a chance to actually put in your email address. And it's interesting, you know, when you talk about ambulance and police as well, you know, I guess straight away we tend to put things or accidents or issues in little boxes. And quite often the police do need to attend for something that's that serious. A question I was going to ask you as well, when it comes to emergencies, quite often, especially this time of year, we've had so many babies being born, so many foals. Are there specific things that we need to consider when it comes to dealing with foals and young stock, you know, in an emergency?
Well, they obviously are going to potentially cause different issues. We're quite aware of the maternal instincts of animals, and particularly horses and livestock, when we go to fires. And you know, if we're trying to evacuate youngsters, that may cause a reaction in the the mother. So we need to be acutely aware of that. And that's one of the reasons why firefighters have training in animal behavior and psychology, so that they can really identify where the problems may occur, and we can work with you to support you to deal with that. Now, it may be actually, if you take a foal out, the mum will follow, and there are some horses that won't come out of a stable that's potentially impacted by fire, because they see that as their safe place. So actually having a foal there might actually be of use as something that will actually cause the mum to come out, but then you need to make sure that they're secured somewhere safe. The last thing we want are animals that are loose that will potentially run down the road and come into conflict with responding emergency vehicles. We don't want horses to go back into the stable during the operation. So the further away they are, the more secure they are, the better it is for our crews to be able to come in and sort the initial problem, which was the fire.
So I'm guessing you don't let all the horses out of the boxes and let them run free until the tactical advisor has said, we can't do anything, go and let them out. Because we see videos, horror videos from the California fires last year. There was a polo yard and it was heartbreaking. All the stables were in flames. And they just had to open the boxes and let the horses go. We don't have as much space over here as in California. And, you know, they'll run straight onto the roads and that's it. They're gone.
Yeah, that's a really important point. And again, you know, why pre-planning is so important to us, because there are some situations when the initial fire crews turn up and there is absolute pandemonium going on. If you, in most agricultural settings, they don't have early warnings. And one of the key things that's helped us in most, you know, modern firefighting terms to save people is the addition of smoke alarms in people's homes. Smoke alarms wake people up. Smoke alarms cause people to evacuate. And if they've been trained and they have a fire plan, they're going to shut the doors behind them. They're going to restrict the fire. And so when we arrive, you know, the situation is far less devastating than it was in historically, when we didn't have early detection, when we didn't have escape plans. And we were probably rescuing a lot more people in those days than we are now. So it's important that we consider this. And one of the things BARTA's doing is we're working with a guy called Brad Wilson and Triangle Fire Safety to develop an equine or agricultural specific means to detect fire and to suppress fire. Because, wow, you know, the fire will develop so quickly that if you don't know it's happened, you know, within 1:20. We mocked up a stable fire, and within 1:20, the horse would not be viable. You know, and that is no time at all when a fire starts in that stable block. So the reality is that if we're going to have a fire, it's potentially going to be very, very devastating. Now, the suppression system that Brad's been working on is really clever. First of all, it doesn't use traditional smoke detectors, which can be affected by insects and dust, which of course there are, you know, many of in those situations. Actually tests the air. It sucks it through a pipe, and it actually draws it through a laser detector and through a particulate filter, which takes out all of the dust and things that we don't want to have false detections. So once the system identifies that there's a potential fire, it will text a number of people. I think it's up to 5 people that you can put into the system. And then once it realizes there is a fire and it goes into a full alert, it will ring people, and it will just keep ringing people until someone picks up and comes and does something about it. So that's one part of the system. And yes, that's a great way of alerting you to a problem, but you may still not be on the yard. You may not be able to deal with something very quickly. So the second part of the system is actually a suppression element, which is sprinklers. Effectively. And we recognize that water supplies may be severely affected in rural areas. So the system for a small, maybe a 3-box configuration, works off what's similar to a massive fire extinguisher, a pressurized vessel. And in that vessel, there is water and also an additive. And this fire retardant additive is a bit like the, you know, the air tankers that you see dropping the red dye on the Californian fires.
Yeah,
you know, that it's that kind of thing. But this is an additive that is very, very safe. It's all natural product, and what it does is it comes through the mist that the sprinkler uses to evacuate the water, and it coats everything with this fire retardant material. And if your horse is still in the stable when the sprinkler activates, it will coat your horse with this fire retardant material as well, which will be even more beneficial in the event of a fire.
Well, that's incredible. Is that available now?
Very shortly, and it's all been tested, and it's got British standards with it as well now. And we're in the throes of negotiating to put it into the stables at the Horse Trust in Buckinghamshire. And we work very closely with the Horse Trust, and they're very keen to allow us to put a system in there so that we can actually see how it works, and people can go and view it. And we want this to be a really cost-effective solution. And I suppose the next thing to do is to start talking to some of the insurers and to see whether, you know, we can negotiate, if people have this detection and suppression system in place, whether we can get a reduction on their premiums.
Oh, brilliant idea. Start with NFU Mutual because they're amazing. I really like them. So I'll test it for you. You're welcome to pop it into my stables, because, okay, the issue that with my stables is there's no electricity there. So is it run off electricity?
Yeah, that is one of the issues, is that it will need electricity to run the pump, and it's just a very simple mechanism. And the detection system, the laser detector, will require electricity as well. So, yeah, it won't be suitable for everybody, but those that have, you know, if you don't have electricity at your yard, then you're already, you know, reducing the chance of a fire starting anyway. So I would say that, you know, we need to try and find a system that's bespoke to the individual, and it's going to meet their individual needs, whether they're a big yard, very complex structure, or whether a very, very simple yard like yourselves. Sound to be. So there are other solutions.
Yeah, we're very simple. We're a bit of grass and a couple of, you know, a couple of wooden stables. But you have made me think again, Jim, that, you know, even for that very small, low key, you know, livery place, or just, you know, home for horses, I like to call it, you know, all the water mains are underground. There's no tap because there's no need for a tap. So actually, we have no water to be able to put out a fire. And I have, so two things, again, you've made me think about is, one, I need a water main outside, which has always free flowing, you know, easy turn it on, almost like our own little hose pipe jet engine from a fire engine, as it were, because the natural water from the mains is really powerful. And so that's quite good. And the second one is the sprinkler system. Is there an element of risk to that the horses, without learning that sprinkling is okay, could hurt themselves even more? You know, can we get our horses used to that system maybe?
Well, we could do, but we've trialled it with horses in situ. And because, the traditional sprinkler has a bulb inside it, which has to reach a certain temperature. And then as it detects the temperature has risen to a certain rate, the bulb will break, and that will then allow the system to activate. And that bulb breaking and the system activating went with quite a bang. And so this system doesn't have the bulb. It's an open head. It's a dry system. So when the detection thinks that there's a fire and activates the sprinkler, it then the water has to come along the pipes, and then it quietly comes out. And because it's a mist rather than quite a large volume of water, then it's actually much more acceptable. And we've done it with horses, and we've got a little video actually which supports
it. I'd love to see that.
Best thing we can have is you know, a little bit of anxiety rather than a horse that's trapped in a fire. So I think we're on a winner with this. I think it's moving in the right directions, and we hope to be able to start protecting people in the near future.
Jim, I think it's an amazing idea, and I totally agree with you. A little bit of anxiety is nothing. I don't even mind having a horse with a bit of a bump on his head, as long as he's not covered in fire and he's safe. That's the main thing. Well, thank you. Always, Jim, you know, I'm so grateful for what you do and all your work in our industry, working with all the fire brigades, helping them rescue our horses and our animals from all sorts of situations, not just fires. And then thank you for giving us, you know, some advice today. Now, if you want to find out more about Jim's work and Barter, then do head over to his website, which is Jim
www.bartacic.org.
Perfect. And you're on Facebook and Twitter too?
Yes, yeah, visit our Facebook page, British Animal Rescue and Trauma Care Association.
Could you pop that video on your Facebook page and then we can go on and have a look at how the sprinkler system works? And I'm sure if anybody, you know, is interested in taking that in their yard, which personally I think it again should be part of building regulations now, isn't it? It's part of building regulations for homes, then it should hopefully become part of building regulations for stables as well. Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Speak to you again soon.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, you can catch up with previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk. And of course, you can listen on iTunes, Acast, Stitcher, Player FM. We are everywhere. You can even listen to us on Alexa now. So it's really easy to get involved with the Horse Hour podcast. And of course, join us on Twitter. Just search @HorseHour or #HorseHour. And it's on every platform. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, YouTube. You name it, we're there. As always, I love to see what you're up to with your horses. Did you head over to Hickstead last week? Hope you had a nice time if you did. And what are you up to this weekend? I'm glad that the rain has come. Finally, we have a little bit of green grass rather than that burnt out hay. So hopefully the horses will be a bit happier this week and we can do a little bit more in the cooler weather. I hope you have a really good week with your horse and I'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.